Lady Soul here on Smile FM.
The Honest Truth with Benito Vergatini. Smile 90.4 FM.
Do join us in conversation on 0829-904-904. That's our WhatsApp line. On Facebook, on Twitter, we'll also be able to engage and share your thoughts. Alternatively, you're welcome to SMS at 35904. Now, Africa has relied on foreign aid for several decades, with assistance going towards a range of interventions, including food security, healthcare, and disaster relief. Despite the successes of many of these interventions, some experts argue that the provision of foreign aid has contributed to a culture of dependency on our continent. Sharing insights on this matter is the Chief Executive Officer at the Nelson Mandela Foundation, Sello Hatang. Mr. Hatang, good evening and thank you so much for your time.
Good evening. Thank you very much for this opportunity. By the way, I love that song. So I was dancing away here, and I was hoping you wouldn't even interfere with it.
Well, that's why we say we always play better music and more of it. You're on Smile, Sello. Thank you so much. So this apparently was under discussion at the recently held Trilogue Business in Society conference. This strikes me as a very important discussion, particularly in the context of the continent fulfilling its potential on its own terms.
You know, one of the sad realities is that that donor dependence is a serious, serious problem. Because what it then means is that in most instances, you have countries paralyzed, not being able to do real development work because they do not have the requisite funding to help them do the work that needs to be done. So one of the things that we have to be conscious of all the time is to what extent we tap into that without it paralyzing us from realizing that we can do some of these things ourselves. COVID-19 was a good example for us as the Nelson Mandela Foundation. So before COVID-19, we had over 80% of our funding coming from overseas. When COVID hit by last year, we had flipped that around, that it was now, most of our funding was now coming from South Africa. So it means it is possible. But also one of the inputs that came from the floor at the same conference was from Professor Tumina Dontela, who said whenever we think about development aid that comes from international donors, we must also remind ourselves that we are claiming back what's truly ours. Because some of that, the stuff they were taking out of our country, our countries, our continent, from resources such as gold and all that that we're taking out of our continent, it's time for us to claim it back. So it's about striking a balance between the two that we must try.
And we actually have to, we are forced, in fact, to confront this conversation because, as you mentioned, the impact of COVID, we've also seen the impact of COVID and now more recently with the conflict in Europe, with Russia's invasion of the Ukraine, that donor funding has also increased. So civil society, in fact, has to look elsewhere.
Yeah, and that's a sad reality, is that how far or how much international events such as COVID and also the Ukraine war has led to more and more. By the way, we need to not forget about developments in the U.S. During the Trump administration. That during that administration, more and more donors, U.S. donors, were now being looking inward. Where they used to defend rights outside, because human rights used to be violated on the African continent, women's rights used to be violated elsewhere. Suddenly, the rights of women to choose were now suddenly an issue in the U.S., which meant that they then also had to focus inward, forcing some of us to then also be looking elsewhere to get that support. And I think until such time that we learn that these institutions, funding institutions in the U.S. and everywhere else, they also have priorities locally, which is why then we have to also be thinking, what do we need to do ourselves to save ourselves from whatever situation that we faced with, whether it be Cajun floods, Langa flower, fires that you had in the Cape. Mm. All that means that we now need to be looking at ourselves more and more, but always thinking in solidarity with those who are suffering elsewhere, how do we also contribute there?
Yeah, as you'd mentioned, following the contribution in the conference from Professor Thuli Madonsela, that's a tricky one as well in terms of maintaining that balance between donors and delivery partners, because often international donors, for example, prefer international organizations. What about local delivery partners on the ground? How can we improve equity in that regard?
You know, one of the things that we keep emphasizing is the Nelson Mandela Foundation. The work that we do locally, we try and work with CBOs, because those are the community-based organizations that actually understand the needs locally. So when we did Each One Feed One with the Kolisi Foundation and Mbumba Foundation, with some of our partners such as Old Mutual, etc., what we then did was we then would work with a local CBO that would identify people who are in dire need of your help and what they need also. They would identify their critical needs. You don't come in as a donor or as a donor partner to come in and then impose.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that we need to always be on guard for, which is why also the influence of international donors on your local policies and approaches needs to also be something that you always want to look out for. I'm not fooling myself that I'm speaking from a position of advantage. We are very privileged as an institution to be able to say, no, we don't do that. That's not part of our mandate. But some of the NGOs do have to then take on things that they wouldn't necessarily have the agenda, but it's the agenda of the donor. In a similar vein, we should also be careful not to always be listening to governments, which then would say disparaging things about international donors because of the influence they are aware that the NGO sector, the civil society organizations have on changing policies and making sure that we spend right where we need to be spending right.
Another aspect around the perspective of international donors is that bureaucracy, and yes, we understand that there is this need for transparency and accountability, particularly when there's so much funds at stake which are earmarked to assist communities. Yet that bureaucracy which is there as a safeguard has evolved into time that has become quite a challenge and can be quite onerous, especially for smaller organizations, who do not necessarily have the capacity to wade through these bureaucratic hurdles, where often the more established organizations are well versed in how to manage these aspects.
You know, you are pointing at pain points. That's one of the biggest pain points that we have as the civil society organizations, which are dependent on donors. In most instances, you find that an organization fails not because they are not capable, but because the reporting is so onerous that they then fail to then even just do some of the tick boxes that need to be done, that they end up slipping up. And in the process, they lose critical donations that need to be coming in, but also they then lose focus of what matters most, which is delivering a service to those that are their beneficiaries. Mm. In other words, when you then receive the funding that you have for you to be able to do the work that needs to be done, the downside of always then having to have this onerous reporting is that your main focus should always be on who is the main stakeholder here that I need to be satisfying. Of course, the donor is important, but the relaxation of those rules of accounting would be important. Of course, I'm not saying for a second that I'm not advocating for NGOs not to be accountable. We always have to be accountable both to the donor, but to those publics that we serve. Because as much as we demand accountability from on the part of government, we must also be accountable to those who fund us and also to those who are our stakeholders on the ground.
Do you think that this could possibly also be an opportunity for social entrepreneurship by way of assisting civil society, do you think?
You know, indeed. And in fact, there's always things are not always negative. You always have to then look at what are the opportunities that present themselves. Mm. Because those opportunities include having to empower yourselves as a civil society organization to be responsive to both the needs of the donors, but also the needs of the communities that you work with. Maybe I need to hasten to add here that because we tend to work at two levels, both at the research level, where we do this work that is desktop-based, but also we do community-based work. It does not mean that those who are doing desktop work and doing research are not doing good enough work that needs to be supported. They also just need as much support as those who are based in communities and going into communities.
Selo, lastly, as you'd mentioned, as much there is a challenge around this, the challenge also presents an opportunity. What role can the private sector play?
You know, I think you, like I said, your interview is touching on the very sore point that we see. I was referring to extractive behaviors of the private sector in the past, and I think the biggest role that the private sector can play today is to ensure that it is responsive to the needs of those that would have been their publics, the people that they were serving. I always give this example that you have, for example, you've got a company that would always be selling a product to a community. They say, for example, detergents. They sell to communities. COVID hit. When COVID hit, I think the expectation is for the one who's always benefited from getting this funding from communities must then be providing those detergents to those communities because most have lost jobs, most have lost their opportunities to make it normal. So I think it's important that the private sector, South Africa, in South Africa particularly, that we always look for opportunities where we can invest in our communities, invest in civil society organizations, but most importantly, make sure that we build the country that we dream of, the continent that we dream of, the continent that cares about the little person, the one who's most vulnerable to poverty and inequality.
Selo Hatang, Chief Executive Officer at the Nelson Mandela Foundation. Appreciate you joining us this evening, Mr. Hatang. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. I'll be listening to the music later online.
Beter musiek. En meer daarvan. Smile. 90.4 FM.
As die lichte vervlou en ek jou stem weer onthou tussen die mure van jou ma se kombuis. Jy sê jy soek 'n begin en ek is net 'n vriendin, maar jy sê ek wens daar was meer tussen ons. Ek sien jy twyfel.